for great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Rick Mahn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, he is locked and he is loaded. And safety catch is off. Okay, set the full automatic. I was talking with our lovely visual team before we came on and referenced Full Metal Jacket, this Stanley Kubrick classic. And you know what? It's good to watch a good movie sometimes. Not everybody's cup of tea, but some great movies out there, some great war movies out there. And I find the best war movies in the world are not actually about the war. They're set in a war setting, but they're deep character studies. So if you look at something like Full Metal Jacket, it's really a study about Joker, and it's a study about, adversity. And if you look at something like The Deer Hunter, it's not a story about Vietnam and Russian roulette. It's character studies, you know, Christopher Walken and De Niro's performance, and that was incredible, love him or hate him. If you look at Apocalypse Now, that's another one, an epic movie, Francis Ford Coppola, but it's not really about the war. It's about Willard and it's about Kurtz. This is not Rick Mahn's movie art, by the way. I'm just saying this because I can say what I want. Yes, I'm uncensored, as long as I stay within the guidelines, of course. But yeah, I recommend those films to anybody. I don't know where that came from. I just felt like saying it, so said I did. Welcome to everyone to TNT this morning, today's News Talk. Whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, and of course, whatever you're doing, we hope it's nice. Hope you're enjoying the content. I am, and I'm checking in the live chat a little bit more frequently, which is a blessing for me because it's something that I always like to do. Still a little bit of confusion about the scheduling and the timings, so please bear with us. We're really streamlining everything at the minute, and I would say if you check the website or the app, probably by the end of this week, all the dust will have settled. We have some new folk coming on board. I'm super excited today. Johnny Vedmore is going to be on from 5 o'clock, I think 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Today. Going forward, Johnny's an absolute legend. He put a brilliant live stream up on his platform yesterday where he addressed all the questions he has about TNT. It was an open question and answer. It was fantastic. I encourage you to go and check that one out. Thank you to all the lovely welcomes this morning. Mark Delaney, little Carol, Mazzy, Lou as well. Thank you very much, Lou. And of course, Holly. It's great. You people are really the backbone of that live chat, and more people are being added. More ribs are being added to the cervical vertebrae of TNT by the day. Yes, I have a degree in human anatomy. Would you know that from my terminology? I would like to think so. But anyway, yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait to see what's going to happen. Gemma Cooper is back in the house. I don't know what she's been up to, but she's smiling. So it must have been good. And I'm going to welcome her on right now. And she's going to dump a lot of news on the desk. And we're going to sift through it, pan through it, you know, looking for little nuggets of news gold here on TNT, today's News Talk.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Gemma, welcome back. I'm not going to, this is going to sound good and bad, but I missed you yesterday, you know, and I didn't think I was ever going to say that, but I did. I missed you yesterday, and I'm glad to see you back again. No offense to Basil, but I'm glad you're back doing your thing. How are you doing?
Well, it's funny, Sonia Poulton on the UK Breakfast Show here on TNT, she said the same thing. She said, you know, she's back. And I said, yeah, well, it's like, I'm like Kate Middleton, you know, where is she? Is it the real Gemma? Yes, it is. It absolutely is. One's enough for the world. But yeah, just a brief respite from the news. Very pleasant long weekend, prior commitment, which I couldn't get out of. But yes, I'm very happy to be back broadcasting with the news live here on TNT today. Yes.
How weird would it be right now? I'm looking at you right now and I'm thinking, how weird would it be if you reached around your neck and peeled up what we think is your face and it turned out to be a latex mask, and in behind that latex mask is Kate Middleton. You're actually Kate Middleton. Is it going to happen today? Is this going to be a world exclusive, or are you actually Gemma Cooper?
I am Gemma Cooper. I'm not shape-shifting into Kate Middleton anytime soon, I can assure you of that one.
Well, I'm glad, because I don't want to talk to Kate Middleton, quite frankly. I don't wish her any ill will. I want to talk to you, and I want to talk to you about what's going on in the world right now. And what's been catching your eye this morning, or what's breaking here this morning?
Well, I mean, the top story this morning is, and it's been discussed at length here on TNT already with Sonia Poulton, is the Kate Gate story. Mm. But what's emerged, though, is there's another picture, this time of the Queen, surrounded by her grandchildren and great-grandchildren, which was released on what would have been her 97th birthday last year, April 23. But a major picture agency, Getty, has withdrawn that image from circulation after reports that that's also been digitally enhanced. And the person that took that particular photograph the year before is, again, Kate Middleton, Princess of Wales. The photograph was taken at Balmoral Castle. So Getty have issued a statement about the picture, saying an editor's note has been placed on the image, stating it's been digitally altered at source. It doesn't say what bits of it, but of course this comes right after the Mother's Day picture, a week after, which Kate admits editing that one too. So Kate Gate and all of the saga that surrounds it, you know, the grainy video that's been emerged of her at the farm shop with Prince William, allegedly. I know you're going to talk about this story in detail with our political editor, Basil Valentine, later on in this hour, but we can't get away from it. It is a story that's fascinating the entire planet right now. And it's the British royal family, which, you know, are never far away from controversy at the best of times. So that's the main story today. The second story is the state of British roads, and electric cars and electric vehicles are being blamed for the 2 million potholes, which now are the blight of the British road system. The British road system is at breaking point. More than 100,000 roads are set to go for good unless they're repaired in the next 15 years. The government's earmarked 8.3 billion of taxpayers' money, but road campaign groups are saying we're going to need more than 16 billion of taxpayers' money to repair the roads. And mainly the damage has come from our friends, the EV. So that's another story today. And also the cost of childcare places now and the availability of childcare for families up and down the UK has hit an all-time low at state-funded, local council-run nurseries. Parents now are saying that to put their under twos into childcare is meaning they have to travel long distances. Some are having to travel to a different country, from England over into Wales, and they're having to borrow money from banks and relatives and friends to pay for their childcare costs. Local councils right across the UK now don't have spaces for children under two, and nurseries fees, private nurseries, which is where parents are being forced to go, the average place for a child under two per year for one child is more than £15,500. That's way more than a lot of people are paying for their mortgages. And if you've got more than one kid, these are kind of getting prohibitive. The government did introduce its funding scheme that only applies to local authority places, not to private places. And it's saying parents are now at breaking point here in the UK as they farm their kids out. Well, they have to, they say, earn two salaries to bring in enough money to live.
Well, a lot to unpack there. You know, we'll dip into little bits of it. The Kate thing, listen, you know, I'm not a royal fan and I don't really pay them that much attention, but we were talking, you know, on our chat before, you know, the show started, you and I, and even Basil. And I mean, even Basil Valentine's been sucked into this as well. And, you know, when Basil starts to get sucked into a royal story, there must be something to it. You know, he's usually got his mind on other things, heavier, weighty political and social issues. But without a doubt, I don't know if you can remember Dallas back in the 80s, that famous soap opera, but one of the biggest cliffhangers in TV history, in fact, one of the most watched episodes in TV history, was when old J.R. Ewing, that old dog J.R., was shot and left for dead. And then it was the end of the season. And for about 3 months, Jim, the question on everybody's lips was, who shot JR? Who shot JR? And it didn't matter if you were a Dallas fan or not. It didn't even matter if you'd been following the story, but everybody was saying, who shot JR? And it was the topic of every, you know, water fountain conversation in every office and in every home. And then, of course, there was the big reveal. And this is the thing. The same thing's happening at the minute. This is beyond ridiculous what's happening now. And I think they've gone so far with this story, there's no coming back from it. And I think really now what people are looking for is not so much the story, but the resolution. This will have to be resolved, Gemma, in some way. There's going to have to be an announcement made, or there's going to have to be an apology given, or something's going to happen. And I think people are looking for the end point of this, not so much just following the story as it goes, because let's face it, it is bizarre. It's really, really bizarre what's happening at that level with the palace and all the people associated with it.
It is. It is a very strange story, just in terms of journalistic merit. Mm. These grainy images, this video taken at a farm shop. But you would have thought the most famous woman in the world, missing woman in the world, you would have thought there would have been 100 phones out. It looks and it feels very stage managed. The question has to be why. This whole thing of Kategate, you know, is it a distraction technique? Very possibly. I know Basil will have his own thoughts and takes on this story, but it is a very odd story in the way the palace, Kensington Palace, which represents the royal couple, that continued to present it to the world. It's almost, you feel like they're laughing at us now a bit, and how stupid are the British public? I mean, the mainstream media have fallen for this image hook, line and sinker, and have said, oh, you know, everyone can calm down now, no more conspiracy theories. It's not a conspiracy theory to ask a question about the state of royal affairs, given that we pay for the royal family, we pay for them to have a lifestyle of immense privilege, wealth, protection and luxury. We pay for that, we fund that, and to considerable cost, actually. So it's not a conspiracy to ask what the hell is going on. It will run and run, this one. And also another major news agency withdrawing another picture taken by Kate and stating on their website it's been digitally altered at source. What's all this with Photoshop? What are we being told that we're not being told? Suddenly all this information in a week about royal images being doctored. I mean, they've always spun the public, but this, it just seems a strange, it is strange. It is strange. There's no two ways about it.
Because we know that this is all a big, massive distraction from something. It could be something directly to do with her. It could be another event that's happening. We know that. We know that these images have been doctored. We know that too. But what's weirding me out is they're releasing progressively less legitimate photos and videos to validate the already illegitimate ones that they've done. And it's almost getting to the point, literally, Kensington Palace could phone me up today and say, Rick, would you mind going to your local farm shop? We're going to take a photograph of you, you know, with that hair and that, the facial hair. And we're actually going to try and pass you off as Kate Middleton just to see if the general public are buying it. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not joking. Or get Lenny Henry in to do it. Or I don't know, Piers Morgan's going to put on a dark wig. It's getting absolutely bizarre. But, you know, I'm not going to lie, I'm a little bit curious about this one. And I'm quite interested to see how this one actually does pan out, just as an aside to everything else that's going on. You mentioned as well about the cars and the potholes too. Yes, those EVs weigh a lot. They weigh a lot. And the new Tesla Cybertruck that's coming out, apparently this monstrosity that's coming out, bulletproof monstrosity in some cases, weighs about 3 or 4 tons. Gemma, the average car weighs about 1.5 to 2 tons maximum. This thing is about 2 times the weight of an average car. And for what? And for what? Why do you need a 4-ton vehicle getting you around these days? And we've went through this before about charging anxiety and range anxiety. And they're also now damaging the roads as well, because if they keep banging down in those run flat tires, it's going to have a negative impact on the roads. And then, of course, you and I are paying for that through our council taxes. So thank you for bringing those stories. Maybe in the next hour, we can pick up on that one a little bit more and go into the childcare thing also, because that's another very important one that's busting a lot of people at the minute. But we've got a pause for now. Ian Davis is coming on to join me this morning here just after the break. Basil Valentine will be at the top of the hour. And in the next hour, I've got Christian James and also Paul Kudnack from Winter Oak Press. So a ton of great stuff to get through here this morning. And of course, Gemma will join me again in the second hour for more, you know, unredacted, uncensored and uncompromising news here on the one and only TNT, Today's News Talk.
TNT's Jason Olborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us, and the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on 3 separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on 3 occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands, heal our waters, and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. But every day we lose more of the places we love, and we urgently need to save endangered lands, waters, and wild species. The actions we take today will determine the tomorrow we leave to our children and grandchildren. The water they drink, the air they breathe, the beauty they experience. To learn more about how you can help protect and conserve our beautiful world, visit nature.org today.
Here's a bushfire fact. Bushfires can occur without warning. So, if you're traveling during bushfire season, here are three simple steps to remember. 1. Check the fire danger rating before you go. The higher the fire danger rating, the more dangerous the conditions. It may be safer to replan your trip. 2. Think about the area you're going to and what you would do if a fire started. How would you escape the area if you needed to? And where would you go? Check if there's a neighbourhood safer place. 3. It's dangerous to drive through smoke or fire. If you can't find a way to avoid the fire, park in a cleared area, face the car towards the fire, and turn the engine off. Then lie on the floor and cover yourself to protect yourself from radiant heat. Live bushfire ready. For more helpful tips, visit myfireplan.com.au today.
Are we on the air?
Am I on the air?
You're on the air.
On the air 24/7. Your news talk giant, TNT.
Okay, we are live, we are locked, and we are loaded, and I'm really happy to be joined again by my old chum and long-term contributor to Locked and Loaded, the one and only Ian Davis. Ian, for those uninitiated, ignorant folk out there who aren't aware of who he is a journalist, he's an author, he's a researcher, and he's also a blogger. You can follow him on Nostr, N-O-S-T-R, which, by the way, no one uses, Ian. And then he put a link through to his Nostr site on his Twitter, and it's about 650 characters of gibberish. So my advice is go to his Twitter page instead, much easier, at In This Together. And from there, you can link through to his fantastic website, which is iandavis.com. I hope you don't mind me dissing your Nostr presence there, Ian, but, you know, give me a break. Stick to iandavis.com. Yeah. That's my recommendation.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, mate. I mean, I'm currently looking at sort of protocols that will enable us to try and sort of circumnavigate the coming censorship. The censorship that's already here, actually. I think we need to start looking at these things. So I think the Nostr protocol is one. But I'm a bit of a technophobe myself. Mm. Getting on Nostr was not easy. It's setting it up was very complicated. For someone my age, you know, I think there's probably a load of 10-year-old kids that could do it in about 10 seconds. But I mean, I couldn't. It took me ages to do it. But I do think we need to start looking at these kind of Web3 apps that might enable us to circumnavigate the censorship that is being rolled out right now. I've recently been looking at that censorship on Twitter and X and hybrid warfare operations that are being run by people. Mm-hmm. Perhaps some people might have heard of a group of people called the Mutton Crew. Mm-hmm. That are, you know, I looked into that to see if they were actually an identifiable group that you could say, yeah, they're running hybrid warfare on X with X. It must be with the Twitter platform and X must be with their knowledge, because there's a certain set of identifiable characteristics that come up anomalously in their profiles that's inconsistent with normal profiles that the rest of us have got. So there's definitely a kind of identification there of these accounts, whether they're human beings or just bots, I don't know. You know, I mean, it's difficult to tell. But certainly there is a hybrid warfare operation currently ongoing on the X platform. And it's the point of it is to silence debate and to hide evidence. That's what it's for. That's what they're doing.
You know, Ian, there's a real tightening of the screws going on at the minute. You know, you're conscious of it. We're conscious of it here too. We are not on TNT regulated by Ofcom or any regulator within the UK. So pretty much you're free to say what you want. I'm free to say what I want. We're free to get on whatever guests we want. And we're not going to get our knuckles wrapped by a regulator because of that. I suppose one platform that's in the sights at the minute, and love them or hate them, they're still being clamped down on. And I don't care even if you despise and detest the BBC, you know, if you really believe in freedom of speech, you know, you should say, well, I wouldn't recommend anyone watches them. The government's propaganda arm, they're run by extremely shady people. Avoid like the plague and don't pay your license. They should still be able to broadcast if you and I can broadcast and you genuinely believe in free speech. And it's the same with GB News at the minute. Not a great fan of that platform. The odd person has cropped up on it from time to time, but they're now getting it in the neck from Ofcom, and they're telling us that they're pretty much going to move on to a digital type program. And people are applauding this, saying, well, it's the death of GB News. I don't think we should celebrate the death of any type of media outlet, even the ones that we don't like, because at the end of the day, you know, if they're swinging the axe at them, surely it's only a matter of time before they come at you with the double-edged battle axe or the broadsword on Me Too and TNT as well. You know, avoid those, shine a light on them, highlight them for being what they are, controlled opposition or government propaganda arms by all means, but we shouldn't be advocating any kind a shutdown of any media outlet, I would imagine, because the same could then apply to us.
No, I couldn't agree with that more. I mean, the principle of, you know, I violently disagree with you or strongly disagree with you, but I will defend your right to say whatever you want to say to the death is something that we need to take seriously.
Yes.
I can't stand the BBC and I don't like don't like much of what GB News does, but they've got a right to broadcast. They've got a right to say whatever they want to say. So, yeah, I think what we need, the way that the system is set up at the moment is that it's top down control. So government control, or, you know, I would argue private corporate control as well, exercises control over what we can say, do, talk about, discuss, think, broadcast. Right. So that's what we need, rather than applauding the shutdown of media outlets, which is an absolute disgrace. There's nothing good about shutting down a media outlet, no matter what it is saying or no matter what it is broadcasting, whether it's the BBC, GB News or TNT. There's nothing good about any of that. It's rank censorship, right? But what we need is a change of our mindset. And our mindset I believe, and I strongly advocate, is that it is our responsibility as individuals to take responsibility, to think critically about the information we consume. It is not up to any suggestion from the state that they should take responsibility and do that critical thinking for us on our behalf. Must be resisted with every fiber of our being. We will make the decisions about what we can see and what we want to, you know, when information is presented to us, it is up to us to assess it for ourselves and decide what we think is important or not, or relevant or not, about that information. It's not up to some other third party, be it the state or any regulator like Ofcom, which is basically the state, to make that decision for us. We must not allow that to happen. It's our decision, not the state's decision.
And the thing I don't get to is so many people are spending so much time and effort banging on about things that they don't like instead of focusing on partaking in the things that they do like. So, for example, if there's a restaurant near me or an independent eatery near me that I don't like, I don't like the service, I don't like the food, I think they're too expensive, make a comment about it and just don't go back again. Don't keep banging on about it over and over again, because some people are obsessed with effectively, indirectly promoting promoting the organizations that they claim to hate and despise. And in reality, what they should be doing is supporting the organizations that they do actually believe in. It's so much easier. I think we're in a whiny, moany, whingy culture at the minute where it's so much easier and cathartic for a lot of people to just bitch and moan about things that they don't like rather than to focus and support the things that they do like. And I just can't get my head around that one. And, you know, I'm not keen on avocados and toast, for example. So if I go into a restaurant or into a cafe and I'm not going to go, oh, you've got avocados on the menu. I don't like avocados. It's like, well, don't eat them then. Don't order them. Order what you like. Or if you don't like that, then get the hell out of the cafe. Stop bitching and moaning about the stuff that you don't like. Anyway, triggered, Ian, I am triggered by avocados. So note that one down, triggered by avocados. We've got to take a really quick headline break, just 30 seconds. And when we come back at the other side, I want to look at wheels. Wheels, almost, I'm yodeling, as I said, and that's odd because they're not known for the yodeling. But I want to look at wheels when we come back, and their new prime minister, leader, dictator, call him what you want, Von Gething, very strange named man. Von Gething, a Zambian, if you will. So we'll look at him when we come back at the other side. Zambia's leader is not actually the leader of Zambia. He's the leader of Wales. So we'll do that when we come back at the other side here on TNT. Today's News Talk.
TNT Radio News.
I've got news for you, baby. I've got news for you, baby.
News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Russian President Vladimir Putin has scorned Washington for weaponizing its Justice Department against its presidential candidates. The US now says it wants to hold urgent talks with Russia and China on a new nuclear arms control agreement. And the UN is warning of imminent famine in Gaza, where it says more than 1 million people have completely exhausted their food supplies and are now suffering from catastrophic levels of hunger.
Don't miss a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
You know, it's confession time here. I'm gonna drop old Davis right in it. He said I wasn't even aware Wales had a new Labour leader, and I'll confess something in return. I read a post the other day about the Liberal Democrat Party in the UK. I didn't even know the Liberal Democrats were still in existence. And I don't even know who the Deputy Prime Minister of the UK is at the minute. They're all such nondescript, insipid people. It's not exactly something you want to jump out of bed in the morning in and dig into Welsh politics or UK politics, but dig we must. And I want to look at this guy, Von Gething. Von Gething has made history becoming the first black man to be elected as Welsh Labour leader. Fair play to him. So his victory over Jeremy Miles. And again, who the hell is Jeremy Miles? Follows a career in the Welsh government that saw him take charge of the Welsh NHS's response to COVID. So that should tell you all you need to know about Von Gething. He also has a leadership campaign marred by headlines about £200,000 donations from a controversial waste management company in Cardiff. And his journey to the front line of politics began in Africa in 1974, where he was born in Zambia. So interesting landscape at the minute. You've got Leo Varadkar, who's the Prime Minister of Ireland, with not a particularly Irish sounding name. You've got Yusuf Humza up there in Scotland, and this is not a racist thing, just hear me out. You've got Rishi Sunak down in the UK, and now we have the Zambian born Von Gething. If you were a betting man, I'd say you would have got pretty good odds in the bookies 10 years ago by saying, okay, the leader of Wales, it will be a Zambian. The leader of Ireland will be Varadkar. Rishi Sunak will be ensconced in number 10. And of course, Yusuf Humza up north of the border. I'd have thought you'd have got pretty good odds in those. And again, it's a little bit strange, but then again, maybe it's all in merit. Maybe it's all merit. Maybe I'm just, I'm just reading too much into it. What do you make of all this maneuvering going on in the political landscape?
Yeah, well, I think you're right. If you'd have taken a bet on that, you know, you'd have got pretty good odds, wouldn't you? I mean, that seems like an extraordinary coincidence. Mm-hmm. you know, from my perspective, I'm not bothered. I don't care, really. I mean, I don't, you know, I mean, it doesn't make many difference to me, really, where some political leader comes from or what their history is or what their background is. In fact, political parties don't make any difference to me. I'm not really kind of interested in political parties. But, you know, I am interested in the decisions they make. It's quite ironic. Was here I am, an investigative researcher and journalist with my finger on the pulse, and I didn't even know Wales had got a new Labour leader. So, you know, as far as I'm, that suggests manipulation, doesn't it, of the narrative? And I think it's quite useful if we, you know, going back to what we were talking about before the break, if we're thinking about critical thinking and how we think critically about things, then you raised a very salient point, which we should be allowed to explore without being accused of being racist. So it's not unreasonable to ask the question, what are the chances that every leader in the UK would have, either a non-Anglo ethnic background or be a foreign born a foreign national all at the same time? What are the chances, bearing in mind that 80% of the British population are Anglo or Celtic, you know, in origin?
That's the point. That's the point. It's like you know, I've been to a few places in East Africa, right? I've been to Kenya, I've been to Uganda, Tanzania, and Rwanda. There's four places, right? So if you were to go to the bookies today, and I'd say, listen, those areas are like 99% black because it's sub-Saharan Africa. I'd say, what odds will you give me that in 10 years from now there will be a white president of Tanzania, a white president of Kenya, a white president of Rwanda, and a white president of Burundi, for example? I would say the odds on that are pretty low. That's nothing to do with racism. That's just simple demographics. And you make a good point as well about your investigative journalist prowess and, you know, say, well, you know, I'm this, but I should have had my thing. No, that's the avocado and toast thing that we were talking about. You focus on the things that interest you and that you are interested in, and that comes out in your work, Ian. That's why I like trying to get you back on, because you can speak with a lot of authority on a lot of issues. I'm making notes here, by the way. Don't ask him anymore about Wales. Don't ask him about the Labour Party, and don't ask him about the Lib Dems, because that's not your bag. And it's the same with me. I'm trying to cover as much ground as I can all across the world, UK issues, Ireland issues, but there's only so much I can be interested in, or there's only so much I can actually cover. And do you not find as well, we're being bamboozled at the minute with the influx of stories coming at us from all angles about other things, that if we don't stay laser focused, like you are, on the work that you do, and by the way, follow him on Substack, Ian Davis, iaindavis.substack.com, and go and support him on there. Fantastic written works there, and he's obviously has written books in the past as well. You can download copies of them from his Substack page. But do you not find that's part of the strategy as well? Bamboozle us and try and make us jacks of all trades, but masters of none?
Yeah, I mean, if there's one type of email or contact or comment that I get, if I could say that there's one that comes, you know, that is made more often than not, it is questioning you about, and you probably get this all the time working in the same sort of space, questioning you about what you are not covering. So why aren't you talking about this? Why aren't you talking about that? Why aren't you talking about this? We, you know, there's an infinite amount of information out there and an infinite amount of topics and subjects that people can talk about. You know, so I tend to stick to the things that, as you quite rightly say, pique my interest. Now, I don't necessarily know what that will be from one day to the next. But if it grabs my interest, I'll start looking at it. And if I think there's something there, I'll look at it a bit more, and then I might write about it. But that's it. That's as far as my judgment on what I should be writing about or not writing about goes. So one of the most annoying critiques you can be ever given is, you know, criticizing you for what you've not said, or criticizing you for what you haven't done. I mean, there are many things that we haven't done that we can be criticized for. Far more things that we haven't done than we have done. So, you know, if that's your basis of your criticism, criticizing people for what they haven't done, then that's, you know, you're going to have a lot of legs on your criticism, aren't you?
Something else. Something else is, but do you see the things that you've been said that you haven't done? The chances are you probably have done them at least in a little bit, but the person hasn't actually seen it. And I'm going to say this, and it's quite bizarre because, and I say this with respect to the person that made the comment, because I've actually invited them to come onto the show. But somebody put a little message up under one of my promo things for this show today. You haven't covered a certain topic. It was the Scottish COVID inquiry. And I said, well, actually, I have. I've covered it several times with Dr. Bruce Scott. So then he came on, he said, yep, I've covered it. And so I said, listen, you just have to dig sometimes for this stuff. And if you want to, because it is something that does interest me, so I've invited this person. Okay, then come on the show and you talk to me about it. I'll give you 20 minutes. Let's highlight it because it's important. But, you know, on a list of day-to-day stuff, you know, some things are going to be higher up my list maybe than are up your list. But it's a case of, you know, fine-tuning it and trying to squeeze as much content into the day as we can. Yeah, you say something in closing there because we've got to take a little break coming up here.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly say, that said, everything I just said, I get a lot of information from people drawing my attention to stuff, which is invaluable. Without that, mm-hmm. I wouldn't yes. know about these things. So I greatly appreciate it when people yes. draw my attention to things yes. that I didn't know anything about.
Yeah, so I say that with respect. I think his name's Dave. Dave from Scotland, if you're listening, DM me or message me at rickman at tntradio.live and I'll get you on air and you can talk about all the research that you've done. I'm more than happy to do that. So that's a case in point, Dan. Sometimes people will highlight something that you maybe need to focus on a little bit more as well. So Ian, we've got a call time in this one right now. Please follow him on the X or Twitter platform at _InThisTogether. Check out his website, Ian Davis, IAINDavis.com or his Substack page, iandavis.substack.com. Ian, you have a fantastic day doing whatever you're doing. We've got to take a break now, and then old Basil Valentine, the TNT political editor, will be hopping in to the maelstrom to throw his thruppence halfpenny into the cap. So have a good one, and stay tuned for more here on TNT, today's news talk.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out. Because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
She was reading at a second grade level in kindergarten.
Pod 4 swimming before she was 7.
Finally convinced mom to get her ears pierced in the third grade.
Came in second at her fifth grade spelling bee.
Drill team in the seventh.
And with one stroke of the keyboard.
One click of the mouse.
It's gone.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Report a cyber tip today.
Many pollution sources can affect the air you breathe, from power plants and vehicles to dust and wildfires. Knowing more about local air quality can help you protect your health. If you're thinking about buying an air sensor, EPA has a series of videos to help you get the most out of it. Learn how EPA collects and uses regulatory data, how EPA communicates health messaging, and how to interpret the readings from your sensor. Visit epa.gov/air-sensor-toolbox.
You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Locked and loaded, Rick Munn, TNT, live, unscripted, uncensored, and all that jazz. Super happy to be joined again this morning by the one and only Basil Valentine, TNT's political editor. Basil, I was talking about you behind your back. before you came on there this morning with Gemma Cooper. I said, you know, this whole Kate Gate business, I said, it must be pretty serious when it has drawn in Basil Valentine, who normally ponders more weighty political and geopolitical issues. But there's no getting away from this one, Basil. Something absolutely is awry. And I don't think there's anybody, if the truth be told, that's not genuinely curious at this point to say, what the hell is going on?
Good morning, Rick, and hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world. Yes, I usually pay no attention whatsoever to the royal circus. In fact, the very idea of royal watchers strikes to me as bizarre. You know, who wants to spend their lives watching somebody else? Mm-hmm. But yesterday, in order to allay public suspicion about her health and well-being, the Princess of Wales, Catherine, reportedly made a trip to a local farm shop near Windsor with her husband, William, the Prince of Wales, who may indeed very soon be our king, if the rumours about King Charles's health are to believe. Anyway, Kate goes to this farm shop and walks around. I don't know what she bought, if anything. It isn't really relevant. And the Sun, of all newspapers, were able to take some pictures. They had one of their famous paparazzi with the long photo lens taking a few snaps. These snaps can be seen on the published story at the Sun's website. Simply type Princess Catherine Farm Shop visit into Google and make sure you go to the story being put out by The Sun, because the Daily Mail have a story out also about Kate's trip to the farm shop, which has no pictures of Sunday's trip, all stock photographs from a long time ago and really nothing to report. But The Sun has got the pictures from Sunday. So look at these pictures. It's very obvious that the individual in the photograph accompanying Prince William, which should be or is claimed to be Princess Catherine, to my eyes, is simply not her. The pictures in the photograph depict a woman 5 or 10 years younger than Catherine, slightly shorter, slimmer in the face, resembling pointed, slightly
she has
to
pointed
the
ears. She's pointed ears as well, actually. Somebody zoomed right in. She's got like Dr. Spock like ears as well. So maybe David Icke was right. Maybe it's a shape-shifting lizard reptile type family, and maybe she's gonna reveal herself as some something from the movie V from back in the 80s, or maybe who knows? You can't rule that out either, can you?
Well, Catherine, of course, is Catherine Middleton, or was Catherine Middleton, from an ordinary middle-class family who made money out of selling souvenirs for the royal wedding. So she's not bloodline, you see. I'm not sure if she still has to curtsy in front of the likes of Anne and Edward, the only two active royals on the scene at the moment, because they are bloodline. And it's that bloodline that David Icke got so excited about 25 years ago for the first time. Catherine's blood is no more royal than yours or mine, Rick. Perhaps if we look into that, that might throw up a few interesting things. But anyway, I digress. The key point is that, you know, the Sun are running with the story as if it's definitely Catherine in those pictures. And I would venture to suggest that 95 people out of 100, if they're honest, would say, no, it isn't her in those pictures. Yeah. It's somebody else. It's as simple as that. It's a semi-lookalike.
Yeah, even most ardent royal fan and the ardent follower of the mainstream media who lap up what the like of Piers Morgan or lap up what the like of the Sunset, even they're saying, come on, that is not her. And the thing is, because it's so blatantly not her, it seems I am just super curious to see how this all pans out. And I hope it's nothing sinister. I hope, nothing bad's been done on her. I don't wish anybody ill will, but it's looking progressively dodgy as the days go by. And there's only so long that they're going to be able to keep this one under wraps for, Basil, whatever it is. So when the big reveal happens, no doubt we will be able to talk about it at that
point. Well, I want to make a couple of more very quick comments. Yeah. I mean, the woman in the picture is slightly more attractive than Catherine. So she represents something of an upgrade if you swapped her out. But seriously, why on earth would the courtiers, the people that orchestrate these photo opportunities and events or whatever, why would they take a lookalike out? I mean, it only serves to deepen public suspicion about what's going on. I mean, if Catherine isn't very well following abdominal surgery, that's supposedly officially the case, then you just simply stay at home and recuperate and say you're not very well. And when she's well enough to appear in public, she appears in public. Why this charade? This is truly bizarre stuff, if you ask me. The only other time I've seen a very obvious lookalike masquerading in public was when Hillary Clinton collapsed in the 2016 campaign, was it? You know, had to be bundled in the back of a car and then appeared a few hours later, supposedly, very obviously wasn't her. So,
the other thing is too, you mentioned, you know, I never thought I'd be discussing shopping at a farm shop with you here as a breaking news story, but it is. The other thing someone has pointed out very rightly so is if she has just had abdominal surgery, she was pictured carrying a large white carrier bag, no doubt full of organic carrots and maybe some homemade chutneys in there. But you would have thought that after major abdominal surgery, her husband, who was walking beside her with one hand free, would have at least said, "Darling, let me take those heavy bags. You haven't been seen since Christmas. People think that you're extremely ill. So let me do the right thing, at least in front of the cameras, and carry that large bag of shopping from the farm shop." Even that is a big stinking red herring, don't you think?
You know, very sharp eyes you've got, Rick. I didn't pick up on that. But yes, you're absolutely right. That kind of detail is exactly the kind of thing that's missed when these things are superimposed in this way. I mean, really very, 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 very unusual stuff. I've never before seen an obvious imposter supposedly taking the place of one of the royals. We have to ask why, you know.
And all will be revealed. So watch this space. Hopefully we'll be able to break that story when we actually have the answer to it, if we ever get the answer to it. But in the meantime, we can but speculate along with the rest of the country. Story here from the UK, Basil. Marks and Spencer's reportedly close to a 7-year agreement with the bank HSBC to transform its banking division into a financial services and loyalty super app. So David Nolan from Stop Common Pass has highlighted the story. He said loyalty card schemes are basically data harvesting operations, but with combined banking services, it will ultimately peg personal data. So we're seeing a merger of a huge provider like Marks and Spencer's merging in with HSBC, a 7-year long-term deal, merging information, merging loyalty cards, banking information. You know, it's nice to get a little bit of discount at Marks's. If you shop there, they're not exactly cheap, but is it worth it? Is it worth that £2 off your shop and to have all your data harvested in such a fashion and then passed on to the like of HSBC?
Yeah, I mean, Marks and Spencer's have been not, you know, ailing for some time, really. I can remember when Philip Green tried to buy them out, just as well that didn't happen. And they're no longer the titan of the high street, the mainstay of the middle class that they once were. So this represents perhaps something of a last throw of the dice from M&S to say stay relevant. You know, so much of their business has moved online and been taken by online retailers like Boohoo and ASOS, with where people go and buy their clothes, have them delivered to the door, and if you don't like it, you can package it up and send it back again. You know, M&S have lagged far behind in that. Their offering isn't as interesting as it used to be. I think they're propped up largely by the food hall. So, you know, HSBC likewise, formerly the Midland Bank. Do you remember that? Another sort of middle-class mainstay. So we've got two ailing giants getting into bed together. I don't really care if anybody knows what I buy at M&S. I only buy food there. Is it relevant? You know, I don't bank with HSBC. I'm not likely to switch my accounts on account of this app and saving a few pennies at M&S. And frankly, I find all these endless loyalty cards irritating. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, it's very irritating when you go in a shop and you see price £2 and then £1.75 if you use your club card, Tesco yeah. club card, Sainsbury's Nectar, the Co-op have got one now, you know. What a bore, apart from anything else. I mean, you can get them all as apps on the phone, you know, but we all know why they're doing it. It's to try and get you keep going back to the same shops and all the rest of it.
Of course, it is. While you're doing that, and you're making your saving, of course, but the data harvesting aspect of it is very, very big. And by the way, Marksies, you may not be aware of this, but they have had a quiet resurgence over the last 18 months or so. Their share price was languishing down around... 70 to 80 to 90p about 18 months ago. It spiked up just before Christmas, the way up to nearly £3 a share. So they have wow. experienced some kind of a resurgence in their share price. Their market cap has went up significantly, but they are cutting costs in a lot of places, closing stores down and moving more online and focusing on the food business, which you have just actually attested to as a consumer yourself. So let's move on from this one. Bat it back over to you, Basil. You've got a story, I think, about, we talked about this last week, about the Telegraph ownership, or about ownership of foreign bodies for printed media within the UK. This one's related to the Telegraph, the good old Daily Telegraph.
Yes, another mainstay of the British establishment. I mean, more than any other single organisation, publication or institution, really, the Daily Telegraph. And that's why its ownership is so significant. Now, it was due to be bought by an Abu Dhabi group, believe mm-hmm. it or not. They've now pulled out because it doesn't look like they're wanted by the government. Simple as that. The in-house journal of the Conservative Party is what the Daily Telegraph is referred to as, while the Spectator, which is part of the same group, is the sort of theoretically sophisticated forum for intellectual conservatism. And the initial bidder, because it was owned by those rather strange reclusive Barclay brothers, you know, them who own a tiny mm-hmm. Channel Island, and then one of them died, that's all sort of coming to an end. Redbird IMI, financed by the Vice President of the United Arab Emirates, Sheikh Mansour, also a big investor in Bloodstock, has been opposed on the point of the media ethics that British national newspapers should never be controlled by a foreign state. But there's foreign states and there's foreign states. Mm-hmm. It now seems that Jeff Zucker, the former CNN chief executive, who, of course, is intimately associated with the leadership of Israel, is in the frame to buy it. But he isn't employed by the Israeli state. He isn't an official of the Israeli state in the way that Sheikh Mansour is vice president of the United Arab Emirates. So basically, my point is this. While it's a point on which we could all agree, really, that major media corporations and institutions should not be owned by foreign governments, by sovereign wealth funds, by the same token, they can be owned by people who are proxies, effectively, for foreign governments. Is that any better? That's the key mm-hmm. thing.
And I think we touched on a story very similar to this one last week, whereby this banning is to do with printed media. It doesn't apply to broadcast media, at least not as per now. But I think obviously if they get their foot in the door and get this through with the printed media side of things, obviously broadcast media restrictions, ownership and restrictions could maybe be not too far behind that. Just one other story, if we can squeeze this one in. Basil, before the top of the hour, we've only got a few minutes. Mats Nielsen, our friend Mats Nielsen, has put a repost up to do with European powers stab each other in the back over Ukraine proxy war defeat. Is the writing on the wall? You know, the rhetoric is still coming out. We're winning. Putin's in retreat. We've trounced them. We've beat them back. But the reality is, it's a little bit like the Kate Middleton thing. You know, that ain't Kate Middleton. And if you look at Ukraine, you go, we ain't winning that war.
Well, let's hope so. That's all we can say. Macron came out yesterday, for all his warmongering, said that he wants a ceasefire for the duration of the Olympic Games in Paris later this year. Mm. It's traditional that major conflicts are paused while the great international athletic competition is on. Let's hope that that's the case. Let's hope we have a ceasefire before or on the time of the Olympics, because nobody's winning there at the moment. You know, the best hope is that Republicans in the United States manage to stop the flow of money. Trump made a hilarious remarks about the success of Zelensky's grifting yesterday. I don't know if you caught that, saying, wow, I wish I could. That guy is unbelievable. Every time he goes to Washington, he goes home with $50 or $60 billion, you know. Some of that money has been spent on a new £600,000 Rolls Royce by one Ukrainian politician. The Democrats, it seemed, don't even want any oversight of where that money's going. Not allowed to ask where it's going. You know, Americans slaving away, often working 2, 3, 4 jobs to pay their taxes, and countless billions are shipped overseas. The whole thing is a sort of gigantic money laundering Ponzi scheme, you know, with an insufferably corrupt regime in Ukraine, an entirely fabricated war that didn't need to happen in the first place. And the sooner it comes to an end, the better. And it's time Europe woke up to the fact and stopped all this rubbish rhetoric about Putin wanting to invade the rest of Europe. It's just dangerous, paranoid fantasy.
It is. We're up to time in this one. I believe, Basil, the news is about to come in. But many thanks, as always, for the input this morning. You'll be joining me again tomorrow morning as normal. So big thanks to Basil Valentine, TNT's political editor. I'll be back at the other side of the news with Christian James, Paul Kudnick, and Gemma Cooper. So stay tuned for more here on TNT, today's news talk.